Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur with your host, Steve Kidd, third-generation minister and 30-year business coach. Listen in as amazing, world-changing authors, speakers, and coaches share their struggles and victories, and hear from best-selling authors' insight into how you, too, can live your life as a thriving entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur. Thanks for being with me here today as we talk about a powerful business for you. What is the kind of thing that you can do, whether it be a whole giant company that you're opening or just something that you do as a side business, that is powerful, effective, and really meets your needs, your life? How can you make that happen? Now, for some of you, you're going to say, well, I already have a business. All right, well, then maybe it's more about how do you really create a powerful and effective team so that the business really is the business you want it to be. For others, you know, you're looking at something more like a franchise or that kind of thing that could be a new company that you could start that already has a whole lot of the things in place for you to be able to really, you know, start right from the beginning and know what to do. And then for others of you, it's more of like a side hustle. It's something that you're going to invest in, something that maybe you even want to do sometime full time. But maybe right now you're just going to basically just kind of start where you are and build from there. The question really is, what is a powerful business for you? And I really hope that we can just kind of dive in that with our three guests today, get some information from them, and then be able to really kind of look at it at our own lives and say, hey, you know, this is what really works for me in this particular situation, so that you can run the powerful business more than anything else of having an amazing, great life, of living as a thriving entrepreneur in everything that you do, that you will live and love and thrive in who you are as you be the best you that can be. Because that is a powerful business for you. The business of being the amazing you that you are. And I'm so excited to be able to be here with you today. We've got three really great guests. We're going to dive into this a little bit, give you a few examples so you can really know it and see it and know how you can be a thriving entrepreneur. So with that said, let's jump right in to our very first guest.
Join me in welcoming Tim Kahn. Hey, Tim, how are you doing today?
Real good. How about yourself?
I'm doing good, thanks. So to begin us off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Tim Kahn, founder of Image One Facility Solutions. We're a janitorial service. Started my business when I was 15 years old. Did it through high school and college and got married shortly after college to my wife, Maria. We've been married for 31 years. We've got two sons that are 28 and 26 that both run franchises with me in the Image One business.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what Image One does?
Yeah, so we're a janitorial franchise. So I set people up in business for themselves and help them to get established in cleaning office buildings. Any commercial space is a good potential client for them because every commercial space generates trash and has a bathroom, and that space needs to be cleaned. So it's people are surprised to find out that it's a $96 billion, that's with a B, billion dollar a year industry, and it's growing. You know, there's more space that's being built all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're so right. I mean, as long as there are people there, there are going to be messes there pretty much.
Exactly. Exactly.
I love it. So what differentiates you guys from some of the other janitorial services that are out there?
You know, I've been doing this over 35 years. And what I found is we're really in the customer service business. You know, that's what it boils down to. You know, cleaning is what we do, but customer service is what it's all about, like so many other businesses. And, you know, Are our crews going to miss a garbage can from time to time? Absolutely. Are they going to, you know, miss a smudge, you know, on a piece of glass in an entrance or something? Yeah, it happens. But having that relationship, having that customer service skill, to talking to clients on a regular basis, doing inspections, that's really what has enabled us to grow and created a model that could be duplicated by our franchise owners.
I love that. What does it cost for somebody that would be interested in having a franchise? What kind of, you know, information equipment cost-wise does a person need in order to be one of your franchisees?
Yeah, it's a low investment compared to most, because it's a home-based business. So it's not like you need to go out and, you know, buy a building or rent an office space or a brick and mortar. The franchise fee to get started is $29,750. And then on top of that, to get your business up and running, you know, you need to file for a corporation and get your, you know, liability and workers' comp insurance and the startup equipment and, you know, that type of stuff. But you can be all in for about $45,000. So it's not an insurmountable amount of money. You know, most people are able to, you know, put that together with help of family, or some people do home equity loan. There's a different variety of ways to do it. But it's an amount that it's significant, but it's not something that's going to prevent someone from being able to get into the business.
So when we think about a franchise, you know, a lot of people, they think that it's just, you know, kind of like a holy grail of I'm going to turn my business into a franchise. What are the good sides of it? But what are also some of the things that you wish you would have known a few years ago, you know, when you started, so you could have done it from the beginning?
Yeah, you know, changing into a franchise model, a lot of businesses do really good for themselves. You know, let's take a pizza place, for example. You know, a guy has a family operated pizza business. They do fantastic. Maybe they even open up two or three locations, and then they decide that they want to go into franchising. And all of a sudden, what they don't realize is that when they change into a franchise model, they're no longer in the pizza business. Now they're in the franchise business. And so someone that's making that transition has to understand that now they're not in charge of making pizzas. Now they're in charge of helping other business owners have the same success that they had. And I think some businesses that transition into the franchise model find that very difficult to make that transition, because while they're great at doing what their franchise system does, they're not really great at supporting those franchisees. And so I think that's super important. If someone that's in business for themselves that's looking to go into convert it into a franchise, they need to realize that they're going to be in a completely different business than what they are today. But on the flip side of that, you know, people that are looking at a franchise because they want to get into business for themselves, a franchise is set up to help you so you've got that support, so that you don't have to go through and you know, reinvent the wheel. You don't have to go through and make the mistakes that have already been made. Your franchisor is going to help you every step of the way. They're going to walk with you through training. They're going to walk with you through sales and operations and growing your business to all different levels. And so that's the benefit of someone who really doesn't know a lot about business to start with a franchise. You're buying into a brand. You're buying into a system that's already has proven success. And you're buying into a partnership with a company that, although you're going to be in business for yourself, you're never in business by yourself. There's always someone to call. There's always someone to lean on, someone to get that support from.
What are the typical kind of requests that you get for support from people? I mean, what are the things that you kind of find yourself helping people with on a regular basis?
You know, it could be anything from A to Z. You know, we get requests from our franchise owners to help with a sales call, to help them, you know, just to make sure their pricing is accurate, to deal with a client that might be having an issue and they don't know how to overcome that problem or that challenge. So really there's no, I don't think that there's anything that comes up, you know, over and over. It's always very unique things that come up, but you know, most commonly I would say it was, you know, just help in the beginning when they're getting started. It's help putting together those proposals, you know, just reassuring them that they're pricing it properly and that they're not leaving anything out or not making mistakes. And again, that's kind of what the whole purpose of the franchise relationship is all about.
I really love that. And so now you said you have two of your children that are also franchisees of yours. How's that going for them?
It's going great. You know, they're, like I said, they're 28 and 26. They're the only two kids that my wife and I have. And from a very young age, you know, they grew up around the business. They, you know, always saw me, in business for myself. And, you know, from a very young age, my older son, when people would ask him, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? His answer was the boss. You know, it was second nature, because, you know, he knew that, owning a business was what enabled me to be there, you know, at school when they had field trips, or to, you know, come and, you know, be out in the playground to do lunch duty, you know, where people, you know, a parent would come and kind of supervise the kids. And, you know, when summertime came, I was always the only dad that was there for the full 2 weeks of Cub Scout summer camp. And he knew that was because that I was self-employed and because I had a business. I was able to take the time when I wanted to do the things that I wanted to do. And I think that's what a lot of people don't realize, is that when you're in business for yourself, it's really hard in the beginning. It's very difficult. You're going to put in a lot of time. You're going to put in more time, blood, sweat, and tears building your business than what you would ever do in a traditional 9-to-5 job. You may put in, you know, 60 or 80 hours a week in the beginning, but once you get that established, and once you have a good solid business going and you have a good team in place, it allows you to step back and it allows you to take that time and do the things that you want to do, be with your family, or travel, or I don't golf, but if golfing is what someone wants to do, it gives them the opportunity to go out there, you know, during the week when maybe those courses aren't as busy as they are, you know, on the weekends and things like that. So I think that's what is the best thing about being an entrepreneur. The best thing about being in business is the ability to create your own schedule and the flexibility to do the things that are really most important.
I'm so glad you said that the way you did too, because, I mean, a lot of people don't understand that concept of putting in 10 units of effort for one unit of result, and then growing and growing to the point where you can put in one unit of effort for 10 units of result. You know, it's good that you acknowledged it that way, because I think a lot of people, you know, are looking for something magical rather than just something that can be a great opportunity.
Yeah, there is no shortcut. You know, if you're looking for that get rich quick scheme, you know, you might as well go to the corner store and buy the lottery ticket, and you know, sit back and watch them pull the numbers, and maybe you'll be the big winner. But if you're going to get into business for yourself, it's going to be hard work. And you know, I love Shark Tank, and you know, several years ago, one of the sharks made the comment that entrepreneurs are the only people that would quit a 40-hour week job so they could work 60 or 80 hours a week. And it's true, you know, but again, you invest that time in the beginning so that you get the results and you get the benefit of it long-term.
Absolutely. It's totally worth it. But you have to also be the kind of person that's built to be an entrepreneur. And some people, honestly, you know, I mean, I've had a few conversations with people where I recommended to them that, hey, maybe working for somebody else is actually a really good thing for you. And that's okay too.
Oh, absolutely. Not everyone can be an entrepreneur. And, you know, being an entrepreneur is different than being a franchise owner. You know, an entrepreneur is someone who starts their own business from scratch, or maybe is the franchisor. You know, as a franchisee, they want to be in business for themselves. They want to be self-employed, but maybe they don't have that grand idea or the vision of how to build that business from scratch. And that's the great thing about franchising, is it allows those other people who may not have that true entrepreneurial spirit to do something on their own, to be able to get into a business that's going to be able to support them and be a lifestyle business for their family, without the same risk that you would have if you did it completely on your own.
I love that so much. So somebody that's listening is going to be saying, hey, I'd really love to check in more to Image One and what I could do to become a franchisee. How would that process work for them?
So the easiest thing for them to do is to go to our website, and that's image one, and one is spelled out, imageonefranchise.com. And you know, they can learn a lot about the entire franchise system there. There's a section where they can fill out a form online to have us contact them. And you know, we'll walk them through it step by step and explain to them exactly what it is that they're looking for. The other thing is, you know, for someone that is looking to go into franchising and they don't really know what to do, you know, there's consultants that are out there, there's brokers that help potential franchisees find the franchise that's right for them. Because people don't realize that there's, I think at last count they said there's about 4,500 different franchise concepts that are out there. That's like walking in the grocery store and just walking up and down the aisles and having no idea what you want and having to pick one. You know, there's brick and mortar, or there's home base, there's business to business, there's business to consumer, there's everything related to children or to pets. There are so many options. There really is a business for just about everybody in the franchise world. If you want to get into business, there's something that's going to be a good fit for you.
I love that. So Tim, what's next for you? Are you going to go into helping and consulting people that are looking to get into franchises? Are you just adding more franchisees, or what's next for you on your journey?
Yeah, you know, I'm just looking to continue to grow the Image One model. It's already been a complete game changer for me. I never imagined, you know, I was, you know, 15 years old that I was going to build a franchise system that would help other people have the lifestyle they were looking for. But that's what it's become. And I got to say that the thing that I love the most, that I really enjoy, is helping our franchise owners achieve their goals, achieve their dreams. You know, when a franchise owner calls me up and tells me that they bought their first home, I get chills. It just because I know that we help them do that, and they love the fact that to share that. Other ones that have, you know, said they've bought a vacation home, or they've sent their kid to college, or they themselves have gone back to college and never in a million years imagined that they would, you know, that they would go to college, and they've been able to do that because of their business ownership with Image One. And to me, the ultimate reward is helping our franchise owners grow and achieve their dreams and goals. And that to me is better than anything else in the world.
I love it. Give us the URL one more time for people who want to check out being a franchisee with you.
Yeah, it's Image One, and one is spelled out, franchise.com.
Perfect. I love it. Well, Tim, thanks so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate the opportunity.
What a fun family business that's now grown into something so huge, and maybe even is something that you can become part of the family too, and that would be the powerful business for you. Think about that for a minute. Maybe a franchise, if not Tim's another one, but maybe Tim's, is exactly the thing you've been looking for that could really be the company that you'd build and thrive in and really feel cool about getting up every morning. Maybe that's exactly what you need at this stage in your life. And if it is, then, you know, most definitely reach out to Tim. And if not, keep that under your hat and think about what is a thriving business for me as we take our first commercial break on Thriving Entrepreneur.
Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world.
Go to AskSteveKidd.com and schedule a time to talk today. The This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today as we talk about a powerful business for you. What would be the right kind of business to fit into your life? You know, the business of running your life. Is it a franchise? Maybe you already have a business. And what we need to talk about, which is what we're going to talk about now, in fact, is how to have a powerful team so that your business really meets the needs that you're looking for and you can thrive in what you do.
Join me in welcoming Margie Olson. Hey, Margie, how are you doing today?
Hello. Doing well, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing really good, thanks. So to start us off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Well, I have a doctorate in organization development, which I received later in life. I was in corporate America for about 4 decades, and I noticed across companies, across industries, across sizes of organizations, nonprofit, for-profit, that the issues were pretty similar. And when I was in grad school in this doctoral program for 4 years of coursework, I figured out we know what we need to know about leadership. We know what we need to know about high-performing teams. So then I wanted to understand why did the organizations that I found myself in over and over again struggle with that? So it was kind of a what the heck dissertation. And what I found was that leaders and teams do know things. They may come across information, but it's all in the execution. So my passion is in helping leaders and their leadership teams develop the habits and put the systems and processes in place so that they are able to actually make these changes that they need to be high-performing teams and have a high-performing organization.
I love that. Let's start off with a couple of basic definitions. How do you define high-performing team?
So the high-performing team, first of all, is able to execute on the leader's goals and the current priorities. And for most organizations, that's not necessarily happening. And then a high-performing team is cohesive, meaning that they can speak for each other. And rather than going back to their teams and gossiping or coming to the leader and complaining or asking for the leader to help solve problems, they have developed trust and collaboration to be able to work on issues together. They know the work that their own team is doing to achieve the leader's broader goals, and they know for their colleagues on the leadership team how each of their teams also fit in those goals. And so you don't have two teams working on the same thing and not even realizing it. And this happens quite frequently. They might have completely different types of teams and they're working on the same things. And nobody, by the way, is working on that other piece that someone thought they were doing. They also are, they have metrics to know how they're doing, and they have a level of honesty and directness that feels ethical, it feels healthy. They are really, when they're able to reduce things like gossiping and complaining and running to the leader for every issue, it's because they've developed more candor, more transparency. They have more comfort with each other to talk about what's really going on. What is working? What did we say we were going to do? Is in fact that happening? And they are able to then free up some time because problems start to be solved. They can free up some time to work on more stubborn issues or to have opportunities to make changes, to move into new markets or deal with new clients. The other thing is their meetings are high performing. And most every company that I work in, terrible track record with their meetings. Nobody wants to go to the meetings. There are too many of them, and there are too many of them that are unproductive, not giving you what you need, and you still have the goals that you had. You still have the challenges that you had going into the meeting, coming out of the meeting. So meetings aren't even giving organizations what they need.
The very short stint I did in corporate America, I have to admit, I love being self-employed. But the short stint that I did in corporate America, it always seemed to appall me that they would have meetings to plan the meeting that they were going to be meeting about. Is that some of the kind of stuff you address, is when is a meeting appropriate and when can we just talk to one another?
Yes, but you want to get there. And so right now I walk into an organization and people's calendars, they're double, triple, quadruple booked. This is not a joke. I had a leader pull up a calendar for me the other day and this leader had 7 items in one calendar block. So A, they're not managing their calendar, but B, they're not using their meetings strategically the way you would expect strategy from other departments or other capabilities. So the first thing I do, and you all can do this today, you can start this right away. It doesn't cost anything. You don't have to spend a lot of time planning for it. What I will say, Steve, is most of what I say about, let's say, how to fix your meetings, people already know these things. They may have even tried them. But what happens is our brains, the way that we learn and the way that we develop habits, if we don't do that intentionally, when we want to do something different, it reverts back to the old way. So I'm about to describe what I recommend for meetings. People may have heard these, but then they can ask themselves, what's getting in the way of my making this happen? So the first thing you do is separate out tactical day-to-day meetings from strategic meetings. So if we're going to have a conversation about our hiring strategy, we're going to need a few more people, or actually we're in this environment, this global environment where there is stress around that, or we want to develop a better onboarding so that our talent, especially our high performers, are wanting to stay. That's a conversation that you want to have, and make sure you have the right people at the right time in that conversation. And by the way, no more than the right people at the right time. So you don't invite people because of FOMO, the fear of missing out. You don't invite people because of politics. Oh, if we don't invite that person, we're going to hear about it. You don't invite 20 people when what you really need are 3. And you don't have the strategic conversation in tactical, because the tactical folks need to really talk about the day-to-day. So when you have your tactical day-to-day operations, keeping the plant, the lights on, solving for the fires that come up, you would not want someone to bring up a strategy. Hey, when are we moving? Or I thought we were hiring some new people, or I thought we were doing this new service, or hey, I heard about this product we have. Nobody's told me about it before. Or I got an update on the development of this product. Can I share it right now since you all are in the meeting? Inevitably, 20 minutes goes by. You don't have the right person in that conversation, so you can't even finish that conversation and give it its due diligence. Meanwhile, you've taken 20 minutes away from the daily tactical, so now you got to talk about that again, and probably again. And so the first thing you do when you separate out the strategy and the tactics is you now reduce the number of meetings. Everybody shouldn't be going to everything, and you increase the effectiveness so that you can reduce the potential for fewer meetings. So that's number one. Number two is you start with an agenda. Now, someday when you become a high-performing, cohesive team, well-oiled machine, you can come into the conference room and just say, what should we talk about today? But until you develop those habits and get those capabilities under your belt, especially with everyone, not just you, you're going to start with an agenda, and you're not going to open it up and say, hey, what else should we add to the agenda? Because as soon as you do that, someone might bring up something strategic in a tactical meeting, or something tactical in a strategic meeting, or you don't even have the right people here. You assembled the right people for the conversation you were going to have. And so now you've opened it up, and maybe someone brings up a topic that isn't even needed yet, but it's going to take up the whole time in the meeting. So you start with an agenda, and you don't ask, what do you think of this agenda? You start the meeting, and then you make sure that someone is capturing in front of everyone's eyes, what is being discussed that was decided? What are the questions that are coming out of this meeting and going into being addressed in the future? And what follow-up actions did we commit to? And also, how are we going to talk about this with our people? You end 5 minutes early, and then you just clarify all that. And I wish this wasn't as big of a priority as it really needs to be. Most of us are in meetings, and if we're not doing that 5 minute early thing and checking, hey, when you, we decided on this, we have these two questions and these 3 people volunteered for these things, and inevitably someone says, oh, that's not what I was thinking. These are smart, experienced, educated people who hear the same thing and come away very differently, because that's just how we're hardwired. So you end 5 minutes early and you just clarify what those 3 things, when you do those, you have leapfrogged over all the people in your way, the competition, the other nonprofits, all of the people that you're trying to serve, because it comes better easier, faster, and you start to develop those habits because now your meetings are actually giving you what you set out to do, and you're following up in ways that keep the ball moving down the field, and you get to keep moving forward.
And that is a very good thing, is keeping moving forward, because we can only be as good as we're actually getting stuff done versus Correct. Just talking about what we wish we would get done.
Correct. And some people don't have the right metrics in place, so they don't even know what they're getting done. So they think they're getting done stuff done. They feel good about it. And then all of a sudden, crash, fire, metrics come through and people are surprised. You don't want to be surprised. You want to build your leadership team with high performing behaviors and systems that have metrics that tell everybody in sync. We all know at the same time how we're doing, which team really is behind, which team does not have what they need to succeed, which two teams are doing the same thing and nobody's doing this other thing. When you're more open about it and you're more organized about it and you've invested some time at the outset, right now you kind of interrupt the day-to-day to be able to set these up, you will later be much faster, much more effective, and then you can turn your attention to those stubborn problems or those great opportunities that you haven't had time for.
I love that so much. So let's break it down into some really simple things that people could get started doing it. For a corporation that really doesn't have a good communication path and those kind of things you've been talking about, what should be step one?
So step one for communication is really about how you're taking it from a few people and you're fanning out into the organization. Even if it's really just six people in the company or 6,000, the way you communicate needs to fit in with that strategy for how you're in sync, for how you're a cohesive group. So you've got the leader at the top of the company and you got the leadership team that reports to them. Every single thing that happens after that, heading down deeper into the organization, is very complex, and you can make it more doable if we recognize how the brains of each of those people is working. And one thing you can add to your meetings is, how are we going to cascade this? And when you talk about that in those last 5 minutes, you're actually clarifying for each other, oh no, it's not that message. No, it's this. Or let's come together for 15 minutes after this and talk about our communication strategy for just this. And then your communication strategy at the company level needs to recognize that 99.9% of what we do every single day is autopilot. And that's because the brain is designed that way to keep us safe and to be available for opportunities. And if I had to learn how to tie my shoes every single day when I got up to go out for a walk, then I'd never get out of bed because I'd have to relearn that over and over again. So we make use of autopilot by we're preserving space, we're preserving energy. But that's good news. The bad news is that means that's why it's so hard to change habits. And companies don't realize you have communications habits, you have meetings habits, you have leadership, the way that I lead my people, those are habits. And like other habits we've tried to change, it eventually you revert back to your old 99.9% if you're not intentional about how we learn. So if you're going to do communications effectively, you really do want to follow 7 times 7 ways. That mantra is about the brain. So if I hear about a change in a company, so let's say I'm a direct report of a leader that reports to the CEO, and I hear that we're going to get a new computer system or some new piece of technology, some new app. It's going to compete with all those other things coming my way. Did you know that we have 60 to 100,000 thoughts a day? We have all this stimuli coming at us and the brain is just, oh, out, 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 keep moving, keep moving, keep moving. So if I hear about it, I am not necessarily going to lean in on this unless there's something about me that really hones in on that. But then I get an email from my leader and it mentions something coming up, a meeting, we're going to talk about it. Then I get invited to a town hall and they actually do a bit of a presentation. They show an image or they tell a story. Now my brain is engaged. It says, oh, this seems important. I'm going to lean in. And so when you send an email and think you've done all the communicating you need to do, you're just being frustrated with employees and saying they're resistant. They don't want to change. They don't want to follow my communications. They just want same old, same old. When what you didn't do was engage their brain 7 times 7 ways, it's not them that's resistant. It's their brain. The brain is doing what it's supposed to. So communications, first of all, it needs to be aligned. among the people that make the decisions and have the things to communicate. And then it needs to follow the process for how I really learn and I really take in information and commit it to memory so that I can engage now and start to ask questions and start to think about what it means for me so that I can be a part of the change. So that is communications 101, is follow the anatomy of the brain. There's an art and a science to it. None of this is rocket science, but you have to spend time and energy and intention with communications rather than outsourcing it to some comms person. You have to spend time and intention on that as much as you need to do your other strategies, because it's a strategic advantage when you work that out.
I absolutely love that. Thank you so much. So a lot of times organizations need somebody from the outside to come in and help them get the ball rolling. And that's where somebody like you comes in. Right. Talk to us a little bit about how they can work with you, where they would contact you, that kind of thing.
Yes. So I was listening to one of your programs and you talked about the adage, when we know better, we do better. And you were talking about, you know, that's not always the case. And what I tell leaders is, a lot of the way, what we're going to implement with you, you've heard about it before, but you just didn't know how to apply it. You didn't know how to execute it. Maybe you hired a consultant and they came in for a while, or you did some training, or you outsourced it to HR. And what happens is somebody will come in, you'll do a bunch of great work, they'll leave, and that playbook or whatever you call that you all developed sits on a virtual, digital, literal shelf, and everybody goes back to the old ways. So for example, if you put into play a leadership development program, you'd have to really go after, with a lot of intention, bringing those principles to life and helping everybody come along on the change journey. That takes weeks, months. You're changing those habits. You're updating the brain. So I've spent a lot of time building what I call Top Team Accelerator, and it is sequential. There are four pieces: teamwork, and then commitment, which is clarity and alignment, accountability, which includes operations, and then performance, which is the metrics, the short list to know at any given time how we're doing. And those metrics include behaviors. And that's one of the pieces that's been missing, is people are not looking. So when you say, I'm going to change my meetings, but they're not looking at the behaviors that that's going to take. And how are we going to track? How are we going to spend just a couple minutes a month checking in on how our meetings are going so that we can change it? And then for leadership, that is, we put those building blocks in place because we don't work on trust. We don't say, hey, let's build some trust on the team. We put the building blocks in place that are the right ones for trust to develop. And then I'm there to teach you the knowledge so that you can know. And then I teach you how to bring it into action so that you can do. And then I'm there to observe and to coach along the way for those issues that take longer because of something else going on for you. So I'm at Olson-consulting.com, which is Olson-consulting.com. My website, lots of free resources out there. And then I'm on LinkedIn every day, putting up content for resources that will help you implement right away. It's Margie.Olson on LinkedIn.
Margie, that's so awesome. Thank you so much. So many services you have to offer people, and they really do need it. But before I let you go, give us just a quick word of encouragement that there is a light at the end of the tunnel in what may feel like chaos for people.
So when I was working on my research, I'd already been in corporate America for 3 decades. I was pretty pessimistic. And so then I set out to understand what's happening in organizations, maybe the same way somebody lifts the hood of a car or takes apart a toaster. I wanted to understand how organizations work. Okay, so I did that, spent several years doing that. Then when I went back into corporate America for the next decade, I started to develop the how can we make this work? So if leaders had all the information they need and they weren't able to work with the art and science of what we know, how can I help them? And so what I realized, that one of the things getting in the way for leaders is they don't even know it's possible. It is amazing to me the conversations leaders will have about what's going on at home, what's going on with their issues, with their certain aspects about the market or something global. And they think they're the only one who has fabulous leaders coming gossiping and complaining to them. They're the only ones that feel like a preschool teacher. They're the only one that thinks, I don't have this right. I have been doing this my whole life. Look how long I've been leading. I should know how to do this better right now. Well, guess what? Nobody's learning how to lead this way. Our first leaders were the people when we were growing up. Our next leaders were the people who were in our first jobs or our first groups. And then we go out into the workforce. Those people didn't learn how to lead either, but we don't talk about it with each other. So when you're at pickleball or golf, or you're out to dinner with peers, know that it is absolutely a shared experience. You are not alone. You are not the only one going through this. And it is possible, it is probable that when you start to put in place these building blocks and give time for it to go the way that our brain needs it to go, and for habits to develop and for organizations to move forward together, it absolutely is something that will happen for you.
Margie, thank you for all that you do. And thanks so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
You can have a powerful team. It can be high performing. It can really be getting the things done that you've always wanted to do. That's a possibility. Maybe you need to talk to Margie and get some consulting help to do that. Or maybe you just needed the inspiration. Whatever it is, what is the powerful business for you, and how can you run it so that you can live as a thriving entrepreneur? We're going to take our next break, and then we'll be right back here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Don't go away.
Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world.
Go to AskSteveKidd.com and schedule a time to talk today. This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today as we talk about a powerful business for you. What are the powerful things that you can do that would really help you feel fulfilled in your life and in your business and can really help you reach your own personal goals? What might that look like? I hope you've gotten some ideas. And we've got one more guest to give you another possibility that you can take a look at for a powerful business for you to live as a thriving entrepreneur. Here's our next guest.
Join me in welcoming Chris Prefontaine. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I am doing awesome. Thanks, Steve.
For people who didn't hear the last interview or are just now getting to know you, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Yeah, we operate in the creative real estate space, meaning we don't use banks to buy property. We don't sign personally on loans. We don't take out loans. When I say we, it's a family company. We then go out and teach that exact same concept to students all over North America.
So what's been new in the real estate industry? I mean, I know last time you and I talked, we were still kind of in the quote unquote boom of real estate. And it's definitely gone a little bit different direction lately. Yeah. Talk to me about some of the nuances and differences of things in your world now.
Well, I think this is so appropriate question because I think 2024 is going to be historic in a lot of ways in our space anyway. You've got the interest rate, which people think is high, hovering around or just above maybe the 50-year average. You've got an affordability problem right now, a challenge, third time in 50 years. Yet, I don't think the interest rates are that high. So why am I saying it's going to be historic? Because you got that going on. You got, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of buyers sort of kicked to the sidelines because they can't afford the property they thought they could. And now you have the media helping us by screaming that there's going to be a crash. Well, that means sellers and buyers in our world need a guide right now. And this is when we shine. Now, you might remember we operate in any market, up, down, or sideways. That's how I designed it. But creative real estate right now is in the highest demand I've seen in my 32 years.
So, I mean, because it's so contrary to conventional wisdom, for people who didn't hear the first interview, go back through just kind of briefly and explain to us the concept of how your program works versus a normal home buying process.
Yeah, for sure. Right now, if you talk to any high volume mortgage rep, they will tell you that about 17%, which is so low, 17% of applicants are getting qualified. That leaves 83% on the sidelines. And I'm not saying they're all good buyers for our program, because our program is a rent-to-own program for deserved buyers that just need time. They need time for credit repair, or they need time to settle in what the bank calls seasoning in their new job, seasoning for a new business, things like that. Big pool of buyers you can help. They thought, many of them in that pool of buyers, think they lost hope. They think they can't buy. On the seller side, that obviously lowers the demand for their property. And so we purchase their property by owner financing, where they become the bank, we pay them directly. Or when they're in financial, let's say, difficulty, opposite of an owner financing seller, they are willing to sign their property over, sell it to us, and they remain on the mortgage. That's called subject to existing financing. So we're buying property with those two ways primarily. Think about this. Rates were 2 to 5% for a good amount of time, right? For a couple of years. We're right now buying properties that subject to way that I just said with those rates when the climate's 7 and 8. It's amazing right now. Amazing opportunity.
I love the whole concept of the subject to existing financing. If you don't mind, let's jump into that just a little bit deeper. So the concept is they still, according to their mortgage holder, they still have a mortgage on that house, but you have paperwork that has you as the title holder of the house. I mean, can you explain to me in a little bit more detail how that works?
Yeah. So let's talk in terms of you and I buying our own home. And if anyone's bought their own home, for the listeners, they get to the closing table, and on the settlement statement, there's the buyer side that they're buying the home and all the breakdown of their fees and whatnot. And in comes this loan, let's say it's Bank of America, and it says Bank of America and the amount of loan they took out. That's what makes the transaction work. With a sub two, that same line says subject to existing financing with, in the bank name, and whatever the balance is at that time, that's what shows up on the settlement statement. So let's just use an example. This type of deal is more prone to someone who I alluded to earlier needs help. So divorced couple, a month behind in the payments, panicking. They owe 247 grand. It's a recent deal we did. And they just want relief. So we buy the property for 247 grand. And we do that by taking title of the property, just like anyone else would buy in a home. And that loan stays in place. The bank, as far as the bank's concerned, that yes, they're still responsible for it. If I wasn't in business for 32 years and did what I say I was going to do and was an unscrupulous investor and I ever left, I left the country, I gave up, I threw in the towel, then the bank's going to go back to that owner and look for them. The title remains in my LLC or my name.
I love that. And I do, I mean, I love that whole concept of, you know, here you can walk in when the bank is offering you 7% and get a 2-4% loan. And of course, all the things that come along with that, that's amazing.
So, yeah, because when's it going to happen again? Think about it, right? I mean, I don't know if I'll ever see it again.
Yeah, I mean, not unless something really unpredicted happens in the market. All right, so for people who don't know how to find the properties, and whether we're talking the subject to existing financing or any of the other processes, and I don't remember, I apologize, should they work with you first so that they know how to find them, or go out and start doing a certain amount of searching and then contact with you? I know there's definitely an element where they need your help in there. I remember that, but help us understand which is the cart and which is the horse.
Yeah. There's no wrong answer here, Steve, only because, look, I tell everybody, if I'm going to go open a restaurant, and I've done this in every part of my life, if I'm going to go open a restaurant or do anything, I'm going to find someone who already did it and tell them, show me the easier path, right? The straightest path. So I'm going to always be biased and say, get help. But I'm not so naive to think we're the only ones. There's people that teach this. You've got to align with someone that you feel you are in alignment with morally, ethically, and every other way, their lifestyle, you pick. Once you pick that, though, my suggestion is to, yes, do it first. And yes, put the blinders on for 3 years at least, so that you don't get caught up with shiny object syndrome and just get after it. There's an opportunity here for you to be doing that even for your own personal residence. If nothing else, learn the skill set for you and your family, even if you don't do it as a business.
Are there areas that you advise people to kind of stay away from? And I only ask that because, you know, last time when we talked, I was living in Southern California, much different market, you know, than now when I live in Central Kansas. So are there some suggestions of places that you recommend as, you know, hey, go here, or hey, don't go there?
This is good because a lot of niches in real estate, in other words, different ways to earn a profit in real estate, they do teach geographic or market shifting. In our world, doing things creatively, no, I don't. I tell everybody there's a 50-mile radius around your house, and sometimes longer if it's a more remote area. I mean, sometimes wider, that you will have plenty. I promise your business to accomplish your goals, because with our profitability in each deal being somewhere between 45 grand and $250,000, you know, most people learning our program, our sort of our lifestyle, if you will, don't need to go out and do 50 deals. They need to do a handful and really change their life. We have people right now, one of them's a coach now, in LA, doing deals. They're always 800, $1 million, $1.5 million. But as a result, his paydays on those are much bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. So the real estate industry, it's just such an interesting market right now, you know, because I mean, I've talked to so many realtors as well. And what beyond your system, what is kind of the primary thing that people should avoid? And I have a thought in my mind, but I'm really curious if I've asked that question well enough that you can give me what your opinion is of things that people should really be avoiding these days in the real estate industry.
Real estate in general.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Just top of mind for me. I sold my office building this last fall because it has the potential to do a lot of different uses, but it's an office building. And I just think that's a little challenging right now. So I sold it at a great, great time. I wouldn't go looking for that right now. It's just me personally. I also would stay away from things if you're brand new too. If you're going into creative, I would stay away from things that aren't hovering in the median price range. I said on a show this morning, people are not going to stop, you know, facetiously getting married and buying houses, right? So I like that for new people, especially that single family sort of up to the median price range, because I think it's going to keep them active and profitable, and then they can explore later. So I don't know if that directly answered your question or helped at all.
Absolutely. I mean, I was thinking a little bit more generically in that you really need to be talking to people more like Chris versus your traditional realtor traditional real estate investing type of people, because there's so many cool opportunities that you present to people that I don't know anybody else. I mean, I do a lot of these interviews, Chris, and I don't know anybody else that's talking in the space or even saying, hey, did you know you could still get the 2 or 3% interest loans now? Yeah. That is super cool.
No, I know what you mean there. So let me quick comment then. Yes, there are hordes of realtors jumping out of the business. When I was a realtor back in the 90s, I used to get excited about these changes in the market because it kind of flushes out people that weren't strong in that particular lane. And let's just use realtors for a quick second there. Secondly, it's difficult in some other niches right now. And that's why we're getting, Steve, huge demand from big communities that are in the education space, like flipping and wholesaling and even the short-term rentals, coming to us and saying, hey, teach our community how to do what you guys do. Well, it's been around forever. And now all of a sudden the demand's through the roof because of the market.
So what's step one with you? What is the way that a person can engage with you and begin to go through your process?
I'm big on free, Steve, only because there are so many shiny objects and there are, in my opinion, too many people marketing get rich quick tomorrow. So I like people to get a hold of our as much free as they can when they're looking at any niche. For us, that's like the YouTube channel with, I don't know, 200-300 deals on it. Go see them. Go see if that's something you'd like to do. And you help the buyer, you help the seller, and see if you like the structure. See if you like us. Our personalities might not fit. We're from New England. Who knows? But free is good. We'll give your audience, like we did last time, the free main bestseller we have. We have four, but the main one is Real Estate on Your Terms. And I'll give you that link at the end if you want. And then, so all free. And then if you decide you want to delve further, there's a simple online academy we use. And then if you want to get more aggressive, you can lock arms with us and do deals. And we do that a lot all over the country, all over North America, but mostly US right now.
So you do work with folks, say, for example, in Canada and places like that?
Yeah, yeah. We have a couple. Actually, one's a very large broker in the Toronto area, and we already have one in Quebec. So we asked Diane to get people to step up and go, look, I kind of want to own this area, so to speak. We're not a franchise, but you know, I kind of want to be the guy that plants the flag here. And so, yeah, that's going on right now, big time. And I was on a show today. The host is from Germany. There are a lot of countries in Europe, a lot of parts of Europe that buy very, very similar. Of course, you have nuances, but by and large, very similar creative real estate. It's pretty interesting.
Love that so much. Give us the URL for all your free stuff again.
The free book, and we usually throw a couple in there, is simply wickedsmartbooks.com/TTE and the number one. TTE and the number one.
Okay, perfect. I love it. Well, before I let you go, Chris, give us some words of encouragement as to why now is really a great time to be investing in real estate rather than shying away from it.
Yeah, this is simple. That there are 1 minute decisions we all make, right? Every single day we make them, and we make them multiple times. I just said earlier in the show, it's a historic, potentially historic year in real estate starting in 24. Well, how many times do you hear that? And if I'm a percentage ripe, why not get ahead of it? And so that in 1 year from now, in December of roughly, depending on when this airs or when you hear it, in December of 24, I encourage you to look back and be in a position confidently to say, I am super glad I did that versus, I didn't do that when I should have. So you have the opportunity now to do that. Don't let the media tell you otherwise and get after it.
Thanks so much. And I do encourage everybody to check up on Chris and join some of his programs. Listen to his free stuff. It is absolutely cool stuff that he does. Chris, I appreciate you so much. And thanks again for being here on the show with us again.
Thanks for having me, Steve. I really appreciate it.
Maybe a powerful business for you is real estate investing. Maybe that's exactly the thing you've been looking for that would really light you up, really help you feel that power, that thrive, that excitement in what you're doing. I don't know. We'll just have to look at it. Look at what is a powerful business for you as you move through your day, as you work and you live and you thrive. Remember that being a thriving entrepreneur starts with thriving as you, being the best version of yourself that you can be while it's called today. Because you are uniquely brilliant. You were absolutely created for a purpose. And the world needs you. We need exactly the you that is you that's getting it done. To run, more than anything, the powerful business for you that is the powerful business of being you. That is so amazing. It is incredibly cool to see you get done in the world only the thing that only you can do that nobody else was created for, because that's your certain special place in the world. And no matter how many other people you may feel like are in that space, there's nobody else that's being you, because a powerful business for you starts with and contains more than anything else, you. I hope that you will spend this next week living as a thriving entrepreneur.
Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. If you want to get your question answered, send an email to questions@wehelpyouthrive.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time.
Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you, I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world.
Go to AskSteveKidd.com and schedule a time to talk today.